A book club podcast with Morgan
and Samantha.
Morgan,
what's in your bevy today?
I'm hydrating again with my cool new water bottle.
I love that noise. No, do it again. I just like how it flips open. Like, hey.
Tiny little echo.
Ready to help.
Yum. What's your bevy today?
I've really been feeling the stainless straw open tumbler. It's not animal proof. They're not animal proof. And that has been a problem recently in my life because my cats like to lick the liquid in my open top. But I like being able to play with the ice.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a Diet Mountain Dew.
Mm-hmm. Caffeination Nation.
It is. It's Caffeination Nation. Mm-mm.
Well, welcome to the Pod Lounge on this, the first day of Gemini season.
Ooh.
Geminis. Geminis. Strength and just abundance to you.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, we've moved into a new astrological sign, a new zodiac, new energy, new vibe,
mm-hmm.
new book.
Boom.
Boom. Go. So
12 signs, 12 books. 12 months.
Yeah. So if you tuned in last week, you already heard us talk a little bit about Peter Pan by J.M. Barrie. We just like, before we actually get into the book, we like to just talk a little bit about the author and, you know, just do some, I would say, like administrative kind of overview.
Some due diligence.
When were we published?
Mm-hmm. What era are we looking through the looking glass through?
Where are we from? So
Anywho.
So now we're actually diving in. So if you want to know all that stuff, like, go back and listen to our last episode. But if you don't care, then great.
We're here for Peter Pan.
We're here for Peter Pan.
Part one.
Part one. So we read. Okay, so for me, I'm interested to know what your pages are. Mm-hmm. So we agreed on chapters because our chapters were the same. So we read chapters 1 through 8. We stopped at 9. We did not. I repeat, we did not read chapter 9.
It was The Neverbird, and I was like, never going to start reading that until next week.
Never read.
Don't read chapter
Don't do it.
9. So my first pages, it's a tight 100. It's a chapter 1, Peter Breaks Through, is 9. Yeah, they're pretty sequential. So The Neverbird starts on page 100 for me.
Oh, wow. Okay. So my pages, I must have larger print because The Neverbird starts on page 122 for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not have pictures. When you said that, I was hopeful that I had an illustrated book because I listened first on an audiobook
mm-hmm.
and then I page through and make my notes as one does.
As one does.
As one does. And so I've been eager to see your pictures. Very eager indeed.
Well, my copy is from Paper Mill Press, and you'll remember what they did to me with Little Women, which still to this day.
If you hurts. Don't know, y'all go back and listen to the Little Women episodes. You know, first TLDR. This is why we had a traumatic experience.
We have
and
to sync up now.
That's why we're really loud about saying repeatedly how much we're reading.
What pages?
That's on purpose, okay?
How many chapters?
It's on purpose.
We're leaving no one behind.
Mm-mm.
That's what's happening. We're leaving no one behind. So I bought this one and Little Women together. And so when I picked this up originally, I was a little bit suspicious because mm-hmm. I was like, what do you got hiding? But we synced up our chapters last time. So
yeah.
Thank goodness. I just feel like making it here reading the correct assignment is so satisfying.
Showed up. And I have my homework done.
Mm-hmm. My homework is taken care of. My name's written at the top. I'm ready to go.
Okay, so I have a lot of things to say about this book. Yeah. And I've been looking forward to talking to you.
Tell me
where
how
should
you
we start?
Consumed it.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Because that's what I need to know, because you've been chewing, Morgan. You've been chewing on a lot of audiobooks this year. And you made a comment to me. You said, oh my gosh, it's so exciting to be like reading and listening and looking. And so you've been in your book now.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me your thoughts. Okay. Tell me your feelings.
So I listened first to this on audiobook.
Okay.
Today. And this has been now, I didn't mean for this to happen. It wasn't planned for me, but I'm noticing a pattern this year of it just so happens that I'm reading, or I should say consuming the content that we're talking about to like 24 hours in advance. And so it's very fresh and raw when I come on to the podcast.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so I just want you to know that's the state I'm coming at this with. Like, I'm emotional. I'm feeling stripped and bare. My soul is really out for this book.
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
It's
so
nostalgia city.
The specific audiobook I listened to was on YouTube. The books that we've all read so far are currently in the public domain. And so,
yes.
Yes, score. So I really like exploring what's on YouTube and, you know, different narrators. So I listened to a version by Neural Surfer. That's,
wait, what?
Yeah, Neural Surfer. And I'm going to spell it for you. NEURAL Surfer.
Okay, yeah,
all
I
one
get
word.
That. I get that, like brain, neural.
Correct.
All right, got
yep.
it.
Uh-huh. So I listened to that. So now I also have to make a comment about his specific audiobook. He does something really cool. So he breaks it up into parts. I don't exactly know. I didn't really keep track of what the parts were. And I'll do that in part two. So when we come back and talk about part two, I will have more info.
Unlocking the mystery of part two.
Yes. And so, but he has everything broken up. And it's definitely an audio that is meant to be more calming, relaxing, like I could fall asleep to this audiobook. So I was listening to it as I was gardening. Lovely. Just lovely experience. And so in between these parts, though, there's like intermissions in the audio book and where he's inserted music. And so then it's lovely. And the first time it happened, I was confused because I thought, oh my gosh, is that the end? Because it said this was, you know, a 5.5 hour video. So what's going on? It's adorable. And so there's these little spots where you could like take a break from the audio. Oh, now you can lull off to sleep and like have a little timer set, right? Where it'll automatically turn off.
Oh my gosh. Delightful.
It was delightful. So I just have to say that, Neural Surfer, thank you. That was delightful. I had just lovely experience, and I can't wait for part two because I stopped in the middle.
After chapter eight.
Yeah. And I stopped and I did not listen to chapter nine.
So tempting though, isn't it? The thing that really stood out with me with this book is you said it felt like, you know, you could lull off to sleep how it was presented. And this is like a bedtime story. Mm-hmm. This is like your, I don't want to say run-of-the-mill bedtime story, more like quintessential, I think, is the word that I'm looking for. Quintessential bedtime story energy.
Yeah, especially.
That's what I got. Ugh.
Okay, so that. Can I start talking about the book? Because that actually just gave me like the perfect segue. No, before, we got to come back to it. Bedtime story. Because how did you consume this book? I now now it's a podcast, right? And now I have to ask you the same thing.
Tag.
Tag,
the talking stick is now passed to me.
Blue
two to your yellow two.
So like I was shaking my book because I got mad about Peter Pan, Paper Mill Press, Little Women. I did read this, but I also listened to it on audiobook while I was running my life. I'm running my life, Morgan.
Yeah, you're on the go.
And so I really enjoyed listening to this in traffic. Very calming, very delightful. The visuals that were just so descriptive, and the classic, we use the word vignettes in a lot in the last few episodes, but the moments,
yes.
You know, the iconic moments that the movies and the themes that pop up throughout, it was just really enjoyable because there wasn't a ton of like crazy, like shocking surprises. It was all like, ah, yes, familiar. Yeah. Ah, yes. What a nice time. Mm-hmm. Okay, Morgan, now.
Familiar with the story.
Dive in.
Okay.
Get in there.
So I love how you describe this as like, it's such a like quintessential bedtime story kind of vibes, because the whole book basically, like the story, I should say, starts at nighttime, at bedtime. And it's this whole thing of like, after you fall asleep, then Peter Pan arrives. So it is very much a bedtime story. I agree. And like, so then there's also like kind of this question of like, is this a dream? Is this real? You know, what exactly is going on? And so it's very like, that's where the fantasy comes in. What the hell is going on?
Yeah. At what point is the lulling off to dreamland and flying off mm-hmm. to Neverland? I loved in the beginning, too, that we got a little glimpse of the parents and their love story and just how the little family was created. They're just small little moments that you don't get so much in the movie, but it's like, Mr. Darling won Mrs. Darling's hand by beating all of the other boys in essentially a foot race to her home, but he decided to take a cab. Like, precious. Two sentences, and I'm like, God. Oh my God, their love story is amazing. But just establishing those sweet characters and those caring parents, mm-hmm. and then introducing the children, and then how we kind of start hearing about this Peter Pan character.
Yeah. So what I like about this and so many of these other stories, like I felt this way similar about Alice in Wonderland, where I am so familiar with a very specific adaptation of this story, which is the 1950s Peter Pan Disney animated movie. Like that specific story, I am so glued into. So it's hard for me, as I've been listening and reading, for me to completely separate the two. And so I'm going to try to put that aside, because that's for summer movie party for me to then nitpick all of the scenes.
All of the differences.
But I have to say, like, off the bat, I love, love, love the background about the parents. Mm. Like, this, especially, like, coming at this story now as an adult, because I'm definitely reading this with my adult brain, and it's interesting to already see the differences of like why I found the story so charming as a child. Like, this was filled with such whimsy, and now I'm reading this in a completely different way. And so to also just meet the Darlings, they are such just practical adults. Like, their marriage and like their romance, quote unquote, leading up, I would describe it as like fine. Like, you know, they definitely, there's this sense of like Mrs. Darling is a very romantic person, and Mr. Darling is not necessarily the person to like sweep you off your feet. And like, they kind of, they have this thing they talk about, like Mrs. Darling has this kiss and like this box inside of her, mm-hmm. kind of like how they describe it to be like this sort of secret or this like depth to her that is, I don't know, like romantic, playful, maybe imaginative, something that just like, that is not the thing that she connects with her husband on. And, but she also seems to be like okay with it. Like, she loves John and she respects him. Or excuse me, Mr. Darling. She loves Mr. Darling, respects him, and like, you know, she stands up for him. But it is, it's just, it's a very, like, seems to be a very adult, real kind of marriage. Like, Mr. and Mrs. Darling are flawed. They are very, like, realistic, I think, characters. And that's presented immediately. And so I got to say, like, listening to them, I very much identified with them. And I'm like, oh, man, if I met you all, like, I don't know, at a game night or something, I'd play Catan with you.
I'd play Catan. Yes. Okay.
I mean,
I have like four thoughts and I have to interrupt you because, Morgan,
please do.
This, the love that is between them is almost practical for the time because this is the, what, early 1900s, late 1800s, early 1900s. And we are opening with them also. All of a sudden they're having three children and they're having to figure out how to budget this shit. Like, how I just really felt for all of the finance brains and the relationships out there where it's like, but how do we make the numbers number? How do we make the numbers work with three children? So we meet them kind of in the throes of parenthood. You know, we get the little backstory and then we get just this practical, but loving family, you know, still communicating, you know, how you would with, you know, kindly with your family, raising the kids in a relatively safe environment. The dog's there. Nana's there. So yes. That's fun. But it just very practical, not pinching pennies, but. Because now they're better off, like, in the
it would seem
quote-unquote like present time. Yeah,
like, they're doing okay
now.
For sure.
They're okay
for sure
now.
Doing okay. Yeah. And, like, we see them, too, immediately in these very human moments, like, very quickly. Like, in the first two chapters, like, we witness kind of some family quarrels. Like, the family is not at their best when we meet them, which I find very interesting because, like, you can't really judge people you're just meeting. And, like, there's nothing that's super, I don't know, like, nobody's being violent towards one another. No one's, like, doing anything malicious. It's just misunderstandings. It's characters being immature, making immature choices, like missing the mark on things like social things, like humor and connecting with the people around you. Mm-hmm. It stinks and it's uncomfortable. It's also just like so much more embarrassing and horrible than how they depicted things in the movie.
Yeah, there's a little bit more just like... hullabaloo between everyone in these stressful moments as they're all trying to get out the door and prepare for the evening and everything.
And Mr. Darling plays a prank on Nana that nobody finds funny. And he's just like, then he's embarrassed, and so it's just these things where it's like, oh no. Like,
oh shoot,
good intentions.
Like, all the kids just looked at you and were like, Dad, duh.
Yes.
It wasn't so funny.
I don't know. The introduction that I got from this family seemed very normal. And, like, it seemed like normal middle to upper class for, you know, English.
The time.
For the time.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I saw them as relatable. And again, as an adult, I found the part where, like, Mr. and Mrs. Darling were talking about the cost of each child. I found that part hilarious. I listened to it twice. It was so funny. I was getting some sarcasm from Barry. Like, oh my gosh. Oh, they almost couldn't keep Wendy. Like,
just couldn't keep her. Like, you're Michael could barely even come along. Oh, I guess he can, join us.
Yes. Like, it's just, oh my gosh. I thought it was just really funny. And that's, again, such an adult thing. Like, oh boy, got a budget. And
have to care about the numbers and make them number.
You have to care about it. So I love that. It also interesting, too, how Peter Pan is first seen through Mrs. Darling.
Thank you.
Did you find that significant in any way?
Well, because I listened to this part twice as well because I didn't understand what was happening at first, where it was talking about how when the children go to sleep at night, Miss Darling goes into their mind and organizes their thoughts so that all when they wake up, all of the lovely sweetness is right at the top and all of the, you know, bad, scary, icky stuff is all tidied up and put at the bottom. And I was like, wow, we are talking about some processing. We are talking about some like working through things. And so that whole like metaphor visual that was painted, I thought was so interesting because it was like she first started hearing the name Peter in her children's, you know, thoughts or minds or however that wording was. I was like, what is she doing? But no, it was just like a metaphor.
It was a metaphor. It was a metaphor. Wow. I love your description. I was very confused by that part. And I listened to it twice. And I couldn't.
Tidying up?
I could not. Like, my brain couldn't really grasp it. I was like, this is wild. This is some wild, like, motherhood witchcraft.
Ooh.
Which is, like, magical. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So in the end, I just kind of, okay, so here's like how I imagined it in my brain was like, it's kind of like a telepathic thing. But then I think like the children, I think like she kind of goes into their mind, like she sits on the edge of their bed and they're sleeping. And then she kind of like stares at them and there's like this invisible beam that connects their brains. And then she kind of sifts around in things and then asks questions. And then they respond in whispers while they're sleeping.
Okay, like I'm 45% of the way there with you on the second half of what you said. Because that's my vibe. I'm not sure about the beam of light from
It's invisible.
Oh, okay. It's invisible
beam of light. It's an invisible beam. There's no light.
Okay. Okay. Because I saw.
It's still dark.
Okay. As you were describing it, it was like I saw a beam of light from her head go. All right.
Like the middle of her forehead.
Yes, exactly. 100%. But yeah, I like the idea of it's almost like as you're tucking your children in and they're falling asleep and you're kind of like asking them questions and like then they say something weird and it's like, what was that you started muttering in your sleep or whatever? So that was like the more practical way that like my brain interpreted it. But yeah, it was like, what are you doing rummaging around in your children's brain boxes, organizing their shelves?
Yes. And that's something I've never seen.
And it's like, hey, reader, did you know that your parent actually just rummages through your mind and makes sure that it's all tidy when you wake up? It's like, oh, that's invasive a little bit. But I love the imagination of it. I love that.
You know, there is like a little bit of fourth wall breaking, isn't there? Like,
it's conversational.
Yeah, the narrator is very aware that they're telling us something.
Like, we're gonna talk later about some of that later in the chapters.
Yes.
But how the narrator knows that you are also thinking thoughts about what they're telling you, and so they're commenting on like the moment that is happening. So sometimes it's like, isn't this weird, reader, that this is happening? That must have been embarrassing for them. Mm-hmm. So fun. Such a fun way to delve into a story. Mm-hmm. And this reads like a play. The dialogue, the scenes, and the how it progresses reads like a play. So thank you for sharing that last time, too.
Yeah, it sure does. I also, what surprised me about this book was the focus on Wendy. And I say focus because, the book, it is written in third person point of view. So we have this omnipotent narrator. They know everything about the world and they're informing us through their narration. And I like that. But there definitely is a focus on Wendy. Like, even in conversations with Peter, Like, we learn about Peter through Wendy's
eyes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and the narrator's telling us, like, hey, Wendy is noticing these things and this is what she's thinking. So, like, we really dive into Wendy's mind and, like, her thought process. Like, we really understand her feelings. So I find this fascinating because, again, like, as a child growing up, this was a boy movie, quote unquote. Like, I grew up with a brother, and so it was always like, well, that's a boy movie, that's a girl movie, and then there were ones we always agreed on. But this is a boy movie. Like, it's all about Peter.
But no.
The book is so focused on Wendy.
It was called Peter and Wendy, right?
Yes, yeah, originally.
It was called Peter and Wendy.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I also love, thank you for pointing that out, because Wendy is such a central part of this, and it is like she's the other mm-hmm. main character, because we only learn about Peter sometimes through her eyes.
Yes. Yes. I, speaking of, do so, it.
do it.
I want to actually read the description of Peter when he is first introduced. And this is, again, when Mrs. Darling sees him. So she has started hearing about Peter Pan while she is, you know, with the children organizing their thoughts at night. And she's like, who is this Peter Pan? I don't know him, but all of the kids are talking about him, but they're all talking about him a little bit differently and have a different perspective, which is very, like, based on their age, right? And their gender. And so she finally then gets a glimpse of him. He was a lovely boy, clad in skeleton leaves and the juices that ooze out of the trees. But the most entrancing thing about him was that he had all his first teeth. When he saw she was a grown-up, he gnashed the little pearls at her. Creepy. Creepy little fuck. So okay?
Also, I had that reaction as well. Because, I mean, toddler teeth, but it's not toddler teeth. First, your first teeth. Those are your first teeth. And so that's all of the bits, the tiny teeth that you have before you get all your weird teeth. So this is what?
Yes.
Third. Okay. So for me, when were your teeth years? Mine were third grade.
Yeah. No. I imagine these being baby teeth. Like, they say first teeth.
Uh-huh.
The first teeth you get are then the teeth that you lose.
Uh-huh.
And then, so like in third grade, I lost my first teeth. I lost, like, probably my very first tooth probably in third grade. That's, like, about the age.
Yeah, second, third grade.
So this was creepy. This was fucking creepy, man, to me. Because I just imagine, like, it's dark. Uh-huh. And I imagine she's in the dark in the nursery. And then she just sees, like, these pair of eyes. And, like, the moon is radiating off of his tiny little baby teeth. And he's, like, probably a teenager, because Wendy is 14 at the time of the story. So I imagine he's like, I would say he's between 12 and 14. That was my guess.
He has like second grader teeth.
But he has like kindergarten sized teeth.
Kindergarten sized teeth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like your very first teeth.
Yeah. Oh, those are small. Okay. So
even
okay.
Probably before that, because maybe you lose a tooth in kindergarten. I don't know when kids.
Peter.
I don't know when they lose teeth.
You know, teeth vary, I'm sure. Human I'm sure they to do. Human. But my traumatic teeth were years were in, yeah, first, second, and third grade were a lot of the, like, yeah. Oh, I got a weird loose one and now I have to go survive all day second grade with it just hanging on by. Sorry, I don't. No, we're not going to talk about teeth. Ew, Morgan, I also had the same feeling. Okay. Little toddler teeth.
There's also a couple other things in this description that majorly, like, are major cringe for me. Juices?
Juices like, of a tree?
Is we're that not what it was? Talking about a juice bar. We're talking about Jamberry describes him as covered in juices. And I don't like that. So he's like, he's wearing skeleton leaves and the juices that ooze out of trees. I don't like the word ooze or juices when they pertain to my body or things on my body or even like in close, like super proximity to also, my body.
It infers a wetness that I don't like.
And a stickiness.
My sensory, like, nightmare time is on overload right now.
And then he just goes feral on her. If, oh my God, dude, if I met a child and they just like snarled at me, I would be like, this is terrifying.
Yeah. It's like, oh, this is what my children are talking about.
Oh my gosh. He seems like, I don't know, this is, and again, like, there was just a lot of whimsy in the Disney movie, but like, I'm kind of, that was a turning point for me where I was like, is this actually a horror story?
Yeah, is Peter a hero or is he something else? What does he represent throughout this story?
Because that's a little demonic, that description. And I did not like that. So that's just the first chapter. And that we started off with a bang. Bangity bang, bang, bang. Whoa. What have you got to say over there?
Man, I just loved, I loved how Wendy was introduced and how we get to know Wendy just in the first few scenes. The, you know, it's the iconic, because they do it in the movie too, but the iconic give me a kiss and then give me a thimble. And so then he thinks that, you know, the word or that actual kiss is called a thimble. So there's a little mix up right there. So it's just as they're getting to know each other and the communication back and forth, the play on words with a few things or how Wendy needs to explain things to him. And through his not knowing things, we learn things about Peter. So like, you know, oh, I don't have a mother. Oh, there aren't any, you know, adults back in Neverland or whatever, whatever.
Yeah. I imagine that for the time, this meeting would have been relatable. Like if we were kids or even like our age, I think that that scene would have looked very familiar. So I don't know. I didn't dig into that, but I'm just assuming that everything that Wendy was kind of rambling through when they met, like, oh, we give our full name and, you know, where are you from? And these are all like the polite, courteous things to do in conversation.
Yeah, polite society.
And so it like would then become very evident that Peter does not belong and he is like, there's something different about him. He's a little otherworldly, not in just how he's dressed and how he's behaving, but he doesn't understand or recognize any of these customs that would be normal at the time for somebody living in London or even visiting, probably.
So it's like, when is he from?
When? He doesn't, like, even know how old he is.
Oh, creepy.
That's creepy. Yeah. He's creepy, but he has like the strange confidence that she's drawn to. I get it. She's a 14-year-old girl, okay?
She is at your window.
It's the beginning of puberty. Like, you're starting to have feelings. I get it. He's cocky. He's confident. There's something about him. But, man, the red flags, okay? The red flags. This is, again, where I was like, is this a horror story? Mm-hmm. I'm now reading this as... horror genre. I just want you to know that.
Well, because in the background, also Morgan, sidestep, what we're reading is Dracula 2.
Correct. Between now and November.
It's not weird because I'm loving this mashup. This mashup has been fantastic. So, yeah, reading Dracula as well as reading Peter Pan and then the next book. But, yeah, it's a little bit horrifying. It's a little bit.
Some of it is.
Because it's also what I felt was the lack of the passage of time once we start our, or I guess continue our adventure and learning how to fly and getting to Neverland is like, how long are we actually here? You know, it's some Narnia bullshit. We're like, you know, did I just accidentally spend like 4 years hanging out?
Yeah. Oops. Who knows?
So, it's haunting a little bit of like, you guys, like, there's this urgency of like, I know you're having a nice, this is just my anxiety. Oh, I'm discovering it right now. This is just my anxiety. You're trying to have a nice time, but no, something's wrong. you should be paying attention to something else. So it's concerning.
Yeah, he did. You're right. Peter did have like this urgency. Like, we have to go right now.
We gotta
like, this
go.
Is so important. He like the behavior in. So this was chapter 3 because like. You're right. These chapters are so they are just like scenes, like they play out in one space or in like one room with characters coming in and out. Like it is staged very much like a play. And so in Come Away, Come Away, this is when Mr. and Mrs. Darling leave the house. They're going out for the evening and the kids are going to sleep. But then Peter and Tinkerbell show up to look for his shadow.
Ooh,
and so he meets the kids and he essentially convinces the kids to leave the house with them. This whole chapter was fascinating to me because he starts showing some behavior that, like, in my opinion, was manipulative. Mm-hmm. I think that he showed like a few traits too of being like, kind of menacing, and it was a little weird. Like, we kind of learned a little bit of background too. Like, he is so very in tune with the fairies. I love the idea of Tinkerbell. Like,
ugh, golly, Tinkerbell, so fun.
She's such a fun. Oh my gosh! Like, she's cussing up all over the place. Like, and Peter describes her as a common fairy. He apologizes for her and is like, sorry, she's just a common fairy. And like, she's called Tinkerbell. She used to like mend like pots and things. So there you go.
I have a Tink paragraph.
Oh my gosh,
that I want
please.
To. This is at the end of the next chapter, but it's where Tink is kind of being a bitch to Wendy. And I loved this little bit. So are we ready to talk about
so ready.
Okay. This was at the end of the chapter, The Flight. It's this description of Tink that made me just go, ha. And I was like in traffic. So yeah. It just was like, oh my gosh. Okay. I don't know whether the idea came suddenly to Tink or whether she had planned it on the way, but she had once popped out of the hat and began to lure Wendy to her destruction. Tink was not all bad, or rather, she was all bad just now, but on the other hand, sometimes she was all good. Fairies have to be one thing or the other. At present, she was full of jealousy of Wendy. What she said in her lovely tinkle, Wendy could, of course, not understand. And I believe some of it was bad words. Mm-hmm. But it sounded kind, and she flew back and forward, plainly meaning, follow me, and all will be well. I thought that was such a fun description of like the energy of fairies and how they're just so small. They can only contain one emotion at a time. And I identify with that. Like, sometimes I just feel like there's just one emotion that can fit inside me and that's it.
That's all. I really, okay. So I love the idea of Tinkerbell so much. Like, I've seen what Disney has done to her character. Because now there's like, you know, I don't know, 35 Tinkerbell movies.
Oh.
Like, she has a whole.
She's a whole thing.
Okay, yeah. I like, get it. She, mm-hmm. in the, I think, 2010s, maybe, yeah, they started making straight to video movies. But they've got cute plots. And so there's a, you know, toy line, and she's got all these fairy friends, and they all do different stuff. And then.
Cute.
Fight crime together.
Fight
and justice.
Yeah.
And friendship. So,
those
I mean,
some of my favorite things.
It's cool. Yeah, man. But the way that she's described, I think, is fabulous and just interesting. She's quite the character. And what I also appreciated was Wendy's understanding of her. Like, the way that Tinkerbell behaves and her interactions with Wendy are very clearly related to how Peter treats her, and she's just like lashing out, and Wendy totally gets it, and like she's like, I understand why she's upset, because clearly there's something going on with her and Peter, and like there together all the time and having adventures. And Peter just tends to get swept away in just whatever's right in front of him. Like
tunnel vision.
Total tunnel vision.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And he, like, this also just shows Peter's, I think, emotional immaturity is what I want to say. Because not everything that he does, like, I think he very honestly does not understand why Tinkerbell is upset with him. That he's showing attention to another girl. And she
like, feels possession of him. Like, she does.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Whether it's, like, it's unclear at this point if, like, Tinkerbell is in love with Peter, if she feels, like, this bond in terms of, like, hey, we're partners in crime and we don't have room for others. Like, we have our own thing going on.
There's only two of us and we've been doing this forever. For how long? Right.
Right. But clearly there's something happening. And so Wendy understands and she picks up on it. Because, again, Wendy really understands social cues. Like, she's an observant lady.
True. And a lot of this stuff is described from her point of view. She's mm-hmm. like, I see this and this is what's happening. And oh, I can understand why. Yeah. She's,
yes.
She's very has more emotional depth for her age, mm-hmm. which Peter really needs. Yes. So thank goodness she's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank goodness. Absolutely. The flight was an interesting chapter. So I'm glad that we're diving into that mm-hmm. already. Mm-hmm. This is just like. Yeah, total loss of time. I don't think I would. Since you said that, I was trying to think back like, oh, my gosh, did they actually say a time? Did they say, oh, 3 hours later we were there? No. Wendy just says how she has no idea how far it is or how long it will take because all Peter says it's the second star to the right and straight on till morning. And she's like, but what does that mean?
What does it mean?
Like, he doesn't have a map. He just like goes with it. The thing that is eerie for me about the beginning of this chapter, there's this kind of ominous line in the second paragraph. The paragraph begins with, at first his companions trusted him implicitly, and so great were the delights of flying that they wasted time circling around church spires or any other tall objects on the way that took their fancy. So that tells me when we start off with, well, at first everything seemed okay and there was a lot of trust. My gut just scrunches because I know the reason we're saying that is because it's not going to end that way. So like there's now kind of like this, again, this slightly like dark tone. It's weird. It's weird, but it's also so kind of brilliant. Like it's written to be that way.
Delectable is the word that just Ooh. Came to my mind. It's delectable.
Yeah.
I am here for it.
Like there's all of these fantastic things happening. Like this has been the events of this novel have already been described as an adventure, which to me is whimsical. Mm-hmm. So I'm feeling in that mood, but then there's every now and then there's just a line like that. And I'm like,
where there's doubt.
Dude.
Yeah.
That just.
Because
that casts a shadow.
On that same page, it's where it's something about how not long ago, but how long ago they were flying over the sea. The thought began to disturb Wendy. And I'm just like, why is Wendy disturbed? So there's also some of like these words put in the beginning of this first paragraph. So thank mm-hmm. you for pointing that out, because I also just noticed like time is passing and no one's in control right now. And we're following Peter. And so far he hasn't played tricks on us or been a silly guy, but concerned.
That's red flag number two.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah.
Red flag number three. We're going to count them up in this chapter. Okay. So red flag number three to me. Michael keeps falling asleep. Like, the kids are tired. And they seem to have, you know, it's they leave in the middle of the night. So this is like they should be sleeping right now. So they're just showing like normal human bodily functioning.
It's like 3 a.m.
Right.
Yeah.
Peter, it is noted, has no fatigue whatsoever. Like, he seems to just have no idea, no concept of, like, sleep cycle or it's nighttime, daytime. That is noted, that it's, like, weird. And so he doesn't understand or doesn't, like, offer let's rest or whatever. And so Michael keeps falling asleep and then literally falling and plummeting from the sky uncontrollably. And Peter, like, finds it funny and thinks it's a game for a very long time.
That's inappropriate.
What?
What a fun visual for the author to give us. And also absolutely a red flag. That's concerning and messing with someone's safety.
Well, it's, yeah, like, he doesn't seem to have a concept of death or danger.
Or, like,
like, that's not normal.
Other people's lived experiences, like what effect this could be having on the siblings watching, or Michael.
Empathy.
Like, he can't even fall asleep because then he'll fall out of the sky. Oh my gosh, there's some trauma that could be wrapped up in a nice little bow with that. Morgan.
Okay. So number three, I'm having some realizations as we're just talking this out.
Yeah, and no, this
it's
is good.
Getting dark.
We have to externally process this. This is why we're doing this, because these books are ingrained in our culture.
Hey, AbPod listeners. Hope you're feeling groovy, and this episode is bringing a slice of nice to your day. Did you know you could follow AquariusBehavior.pod on Instagram to see weekly episode updates and behind-the-scenes podcast pictures? Yeah, it's true. You can also email the show at aquariusbehavior.pod@gmail.com to share your friendship stories or suggest a segment. Stay hydrated, buddies. Now on with the show. This is for real.
Red flag number four. So for me, this is on page 50 at the bottom.
Okay.
And Wendy and Michael and John are just kind of discussing the events because, as, like, you know, they've noticed now there's been three red flags since they've been flying together. And now they're just kind of having almost this conversation, like, have we gone too far? Like, what's the point of no return? Or, like, hey, have we thought about how we're getting home? I don't know. Just ideas.
Just spitballing here.
Fuck. We're fucked is basically the conversation they're having. All right.
You must be nice to him, Wendy impressed on her brothers. What could we do if he were to leave us?
We could go back, Michael said.
How could we ever find our way back without him? Well, then, we must go on, said John.
That is the awful thing, John. We should have to go on, for we don't know how to stop.
So at this point, I wrote a note in my book that says, have they been kidnapped?
Yeah.
Because this is very much sounding now like a captive situation. Like, this is, that was dark. Like, we need to be nice because we kind of rely on this person now. Like, these kids are, like, this is a dangerous situation. You don't know how to get home.
They're trying to figure out, like, contingency plans. Because I'm looking at the few paragraphs after what you just read. And they're saying, how are we going to get food? How are we going to find our way? What's going to happen to us? So, like, they've jumped off into this great adventure. But, like, with no plan, no forethought. It's just, we're going to go on an adventure with Peter Pan. But who has whose best interests?
Right. They're also still learning how to fly. So things that they're not, I mean, they definitely, like, describe some of the dexterity challenges and stuff that they have. Do you have a snippet to read?
I just got freaked out because I read the sentence that I'd been looking for the last few minutes.
Oh.
It's the, and if he forgets them so quickly, Wendy argued, how can we expect that he will go on remembering us?
Oh my God.
So talking about he was short term memory and, like,
yes.
So there's also an element of forgetting that's happening too as the book progresses throughout the next few chapters.
Because Peter, he's bopping in and out of their fucking flight. So he's, quote, he's kind of leading them. Like, first of all, they're brand new to flying, right? So, like, they didn't really discuss this, but I'm thinking in my head, like,
how long is their stamina? Like, they're falling asleep, but, like, yeah, do they need to refuel? Like, does the pixie dust ever run out?
Yeah.
What if these worrisome thoughts start to overtake their happy thoughts and they no longer have happy thoughts? Like, is that going to affect things? Again, things that they're not thinking of because they're children, and I'm a 36-year-old lady at this point. So I'm just like, hello.
I agree. These are the things you have to think about when you're embarking on a trip with Peter Pan.
You didn't account for this in your trip planning. Mm-hmm. And so, so yeah, all of those things are happening, and it's just like really creepy. I hated that. I also marked a bit of this book that like talked about what you just talked about. Mine was on page 52.
52.
It said
47.
Indeed. Sometimes when he returned, he did not remember them. At least not well. Wendy was sure of it. She saw recognition come into his eyes as he was about to pass them the time of day and go on. Once even, she had to call him by name. "I'm Wendy," she said agitatedly. He was very sorry. "I say, Wendy," he whispered to her. "Always, if you see me forgetting you, you just keep on saying, 'I'm Wendy,' and then I'll remember." Fuck no. No. Like, how long is he gone for on these side quests?
And like the way,
what is he doing?
The way that this is also presented is the many times that they've hung out, sometimes when he returned. So it's like, it's talking about how this is happening so often, where like this is a normal occurrence in this lost time that they've like now had in Neverland.
Yes.
I'm going to throw up, Morgan. This is amazing.
I'm so sick. Like, I can't.
Also, okay, I do have a photo.
Oh, you do?
There's photography. No, there's this is a drawing in the Paper Mill Historical Press books. Artifact. Yep. It's for the chapter The Flight, and the caption is "Let him keep who can." And you see that it's all of the children flying around. And then there are also, it looks like, birds in the picture. Look at that chaos, girl. Mm. Look at just everyone's trying to stay up.
Ooh.
There's just a lot of things happening. Yeah, it was, I listened to this on audiobook, but then I opened my book and I realized that there were pictures. So I had to get into it.
There's a whole ecosystem up there in the sky that I'm not personally familiar with.
The flamingos.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was even a mention of how, like, I don't know, it's uncomfortable. There was Peter's way of collecting food, like the normal way for him was to steal it from birds. And so as he saw birds fly with food, so he would steal it from these birds. So, like, again, that's not normal behavior for a human boy.
It's like feral behavior.
That is feral, like, behavior.
This is just a feral child.
It is, like,
oh no.
That's wild. That's just wild. That's some, like, I don't know, that's like some Lord of the Flies shit, man. It's uncomfortable. So then we get to Neverland. Like, girl, what are your first impressions?
Neverland,
tell me everything.
I mean, like, Neverland is just well, so first of all, we meet all of these lost boys. They shoot a bunch of arrows, right, at all of the kids. Do they hit Wendy at this point? Yes.
Yes. That's a little bit later. Okay. Yes. So I think, like, we meet the pirates first, actually.
That's right. We meet Hook and everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We have some time with the pirates. I just thought that this, the whole... description of, like, all right, here's this pirate, and then here's this pirate, because I loved the description of Captain Hook. Can I read it to you?
Oh my gosh, please. Please, okay. please.
A couple paragraphs before the description of Captain Hook, it just says, "A more villainous looking lot never hung in a row on execution dock. Here, a little in advance, ever and again with his head on the ground listening, his great arms bare, pieces of aid in his ears as ornament is the handsome Italian Checco. Okay, anyway. Okay, here's Hooks.
Okay.
In the midst of them, the blackest and largest jewel in that dark setting, reclined James Hook, or, as he wrote himself, Jazz. Jazz, Morgan? Jazz?
Sure.
Does yours say Jazz?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay, I like
it. I'm like, Jazz. Okay, love that for you. Or, as he wrote himself, Jazz. Hook, of whom it is said he was the only man that had sea cook feared, he laid at his ease in a rough chariot drawn and propelled by his men, and instead of a right hand he had an iron hook with which ever and anon he encouraged them to increase their pace. As dogs this terrible man treated and addressed them, and as dogs they obeyed him. In person he was cadaverous and black-advised. Is that the word you have too? Black-advised?
Is that what it says?
Cadaverous and black, A-V-I-S-E-D. And his hair was dressed in long curls, which at a little distance looked like black candles and gave a singularly threatened expression to his handsome countenance. Anyway, cadaverous. Just the cadaverous man. So it's like I was talking about Hot Hook a couple episodes ago, but this is not giving me Hot Hook vibes.
Like cadaverous? like a cadaver? Like dead looking?
That's what I would assume. Cadaverous. Like gaunt? Yeah, cadaverous.
Is that what we're going for?
That's what I think is just like threatening expression. Because it's a singularly threatening expression to his handsome countenance. His eyes were of blue forget-me-not and of profound melancholy, save when he was plunging his hook into you. So there's also a little bit of, like, gory shit in this, too, where it's like, who's this fucking pirate with his hand? And he has, like, this kind of, I won't say chauvinistic style, but that's not what's in here. But this very much, like, obey me, I am the captain kind of energy, where he's being carried around by other men.
Yeah, there's the profound melancholy in his look. Like, yes. That gets me. It seems
profound melancholy.
There is something haunting about him. Like, he definitely has a backstory. Like, for sure, he's got this dark, haunted backstory. Like, there's something almost kind of boyish in his description where I'm like, oh my gosh, you like... There's something about you that seems like it was once youthful, and then this, like, kind of skeletal description they give of him. It's almost like, I don't know, there's something poisoning him. Adulthood. It's adulthood that's poisoning him. And it's just draining the life from him.
Well, the other thing that just popped out to me, too, was it talks about how he speaks. And even when he was swearing, no less than the distinction of his demeanor showed him one of a difference to cast from his crew. So it's he had just like the elegance of his diction even when he was swearing. Like, he is going to make you feel like shit in like the most calm fucking voice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he does have this like gentlemanly manner about him. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a line, he was never more sinister than when he was most polite.
Yeah.
Ooh, like, yeah, he has dark intentions. Ooh. And he's battling with a 13-year-old boy.
With weird toddler
arch
teeth.
Arch nemesis with weird toddler teeth. It's the horror story you didn't know you were getting in Gemini.
Morgan, what were your impressions of Neverland as we like zoomed in and met these pirates and kind of the scene got set for us?
Well, so I was, you know, we were introduced to the inevitable blatant racism that was going to happen and we know happens with the classics that we're reading.
That's right.
We do sometimes read books that like are sometimes on banned lists and then we talk about that. So the importance of it is to read it and recognize it and know like, oh, this is why we still have tones of racism in our society today, because this is how people were perceived and how, like, that perception was spread and became, quote unquote, knowledge and truth.
Part of the culture.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And so, like, this is why it's important that we recognize it and know, like, this is how it happened, so that we can stop that in the future. So
let's talk about people in a context that isn't racist.
Right. Because, like, you know, when we talk about the, we're first introduced to all of the Lost Boys. And I have to say, the first one, which I've never put together ever, because in the movie Hook, we are introduced to a character named Tootles. And Tootles is an elderly gentleman that seems to know Peter, Robin Williams' character, and they're familiar with each other. But, like, Tootles seems to have, like, this knowledge of Neverland, but everybody kind of thinks, like, he's senile, so no one listens to him.
What a goof.
So here in the book, Tootles is a lost boy, and he's written into the story. So that was the first time I ever made that connection. I was like, oh my gosh. So I'm never going to watch Hook the same ever again. So I liked kind of this lineup. And again, like, very kind of script-like, where he literally numbers them off. And he's like, this is, if we're going in a line, this is the order.
Like, here are my drinks for the evening. Follow the leader. And here are the lost boys that we have.
Yes, here's what everybody's wearing. It was kind of like fashion show. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, here's what everyone's wearing. Like, here's if they fall in line. This also, I must say, like, presented Peter Pan as a little bit like some dictator traits going on. Like, he runs a tight operation.
He runs a tight ship.
But it's very much children. Just focused on him and, like, making sure he is the star and situations benefit him. And, like, it's centered around his comfort and not as much the comfort of his group. And so, like, questionable leadership skills, because he's very clearly their leader. But, like, is he a mature, benevolent leader? Or is he a little bit of a selfish leader?
A little bit of an impulsive.
Very impulsive. Yep. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. So,
and you have this cycle that we, like, discover on the island of the pirates, and who are referred to and then as the Redskins, but the Indians of the area, because they're not Native Americans, because we're not in America, we're in Neverland.
Ugh,
so like, gosh, it's just like, how do you?
So
but
uncomfortable.
We meet Tiger Lily, but we have this whole pirate redskin, like, killing each other thing happening. So there's also, like, this animosity amongst all of the adults on the island. Mm-hmm. And we meet Tiger Lily, which is way fun, because let's talk about girl power.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Peter does talk about killing.
Yeah, a lot.
And, like, Wendy point blank asks him, and he's like, oh yeah, for sure.
Like, kill stuff.
I've killed people, like, we fight all the time. It's no big deal. Which, again, you know, I think about, like, when they're flying, and, like, does he not, he doesn't seem to have a concept of danger or, like, death or ending. Like,
he hasn't even grown up, so how can he die, you know?
Like, if I met a person like that, that would, again, red flag.
That would just piss me off.
Throwing red flags all over the place here. Yeah. All right, Peter. All right. So I just, phenomenal. Pirates. What did you think of the pirates? That cast of characters.
I just love a good crew of pirates. I love a good team, and I'm excited to meet the pirates more as we move forward. Smee is always just a highlight. Just, you know, rocking the number two position. Just being a helpful to the narration too, of, like, giving us additional information as the reader. It's like, oh, thanks, mm-hmm. Smee.
Thank you, Smee.
Smee.
I just, the classic Smee for me is Bob what is his name? Bob Hoskins from Hook.
From Hook.
Yes. Specifically, that Smee for me. That's like the classic Smee. So as I read this, that's totally who I see in that character.
That motif.
Yeah, it's very much that motif. The pirates read a lot more dangerous to me, I will say.
Yeah, like, tell me about that.
When, well, you know, my vision of these pirates based on how I've grown up and consumed this story are silly. Like, they're
bumbling?
Definitely bumbling. Bumbling. That's a great word. That is a great word for them. They're bumbling. They're kind of fools. I get no sense that, like, Peter Pan isn't going to win and save the day. But,
like, he's clearly the hero of the day.
Correct. Yes. But these pirates, like, they talk about, like, specific ways that they like to murder people and their specialties and, you know, even, like, Captain Hook's whole description. Ooh, there's just something, like, actually dangerous about them and fearful. Like, I would not want my children playing with them. Let's just say that. I'm not calling them to babysit. So that was surprising for me, for sure. Again, is this a horror novel?
Yes.
It is a horror genre.
Absolutely.
At least as a 36-year-old lady.
Morgan, it's all been horror so far. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, horror.
Horror.
Little Women, horror. It's the Civil War, man.
Everyone's Civil War, poor. Poverty.
It's just sad.
Like...
Alice in Wonderland.
Horror. Trippy horror. Cheshire Cat. I hate that.
Through the Looking Glass. Horror. Morgan, now it's Peter Pan. Horror. And Dracula. Horror. This is the year of, like, classic horror novels.
It are, like, classic Western children's literature. Is it actually all just horror?
And terrifying. It's a, like, cautionary tale real? Shit. Absolutely. This is why we're all fucked up, Morgan.
Oh my gosh. This is just, like, warping my entire perspective.
Look at how much we're learning this year. Look at this. Look at what this little jaunt through just harmless children's classics. That's how I framed it at the beginning of the year. Human behavior and choices and conditions and, like, you'll just go murder someone. Okay, fine. Like, geez, Peter.
Humanity is dark.
Wow.
Okay. And especially, like, when we talk about original stories, because we get into this every time, because the books that we are reading, they are at least 100 years old.
Yeah.
We haven't read anything that is under 100 years old this year.
That is correct.
So,
yep.
So, like, these are all books that, again, like, growing up in, like, Western mainstream culture, like, we are very familiar with these types of stories, but they have been adapted. They have been revised. Like, we have run into this with every single novel that we've read this year. And so it's interesting getting back to, like, the original text, because I believe what you and I have is, like, close, as close to the original text of Peter and Wendy. Mm-hmm. Ooh, cringe.
It's also because, like you were saying, through time, we have these archetypes, right? It's this, I think of, oh gosh, it's some sort of, like, folklore that I learned about where, okay, give me just a second. It's where a boy, a light-skinned boy, comes to you and takes you on adventures. And it's, like, I want to say Filipino folklore, but I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And it's, but it's that kind of same thing, the themes that, like, flow through, like, cultures and stories and society. And it's, like, look at this beautiful adventure opportunity and this supposedly safe, you know, child. But then you're put into this Neverland of all of these really unfamiliar experiences and this backdrop of, like, danger and violence and wonder. And it just, It's a horror book.
So this book is also like, okay, wow. Give me my Inception moment here, okay?
I'm ready.
This book is quite meta, right? Because Peter Pan, like as we're talking about it right now, like Peter Pan is like, it's a story that's just embedded in us. And it's something so common. And the way that he's introduced is that there is like this fable about Peter Pan.
Yes.
Mrs. Darling recognizes. She's like, who is this Peter Pan? And then she does have like this recognition of like, I remember like kind of hearing about him when I was younger, but how she knows of him is slightly different, which again is just like what happens with stories in society.
Oh, like, Morgan, yes, yes.
You know, we tell the same stories and we have like the same archetypal structures in our stories that we've had for millennia. Like, truly.
But what a great device to put Absolutely. Your character into the lore of the world that you're building and creating.
Yes.
It's a storyception.
Because it Absolutely. Also, Peter Pan takes place in the real world. Like, we are in London. Kensington Garden is a real place. Like, they're referencing real places. You know, we talk about, like, the cultural customs. Those are all things of the time. And so reading this, like, everything would seem very modern, right? And then they're talking about this Peter Pan character, which we didn't even address. So Mrs. Darling, the version that she knows of Peter Pan, the legend about Peter Pan that she's familiar with, is that he would escort dying children basically, like, over to the other side.
Vomit forever. Oh, my gosh.
How fucking
nightmare.
Creepy, dude. And so now she's like hearing her kids talk about Peter Pan, and her knowledge is like he helps children cross over. And now all three of her children are like whispering his name in their sleep. And then she sees him and he growls at her like he is coming to snatch them away.
Are all the lost boys just dead? Is this just Puck. Like...
Are they even real? Is this, or are they figments of his imagination?
Oh my gosh.
I don't know.
Are we on the Lost Island?
This is fucked up, man. Like, this is...
Oh, no.
It's too much.
What a delightful book. Wow. What a delight. This is so fun. But I didn't even think about that, Morgan. No, I love when you bring things up and circle back to stuff because, like... We only have, you know, so many days to, like, chow through these books. And
right.
While we would love to take some time to really dig in literary, I did not think of that at all. And the nightmare time of having your children start talking about some shit. And it's like, I heard about this when I was a kid. So that means that Peter's really fucking old. And he's been doing some haunted shit for a while.
Correct. Like, if Mrs. Darling knows and she heard it from people, like, absolutely. So he's been around for generations what is happening. Shivers. Okay. He's older than time itself, possibly. So there's also, okay, there's just kind of some inappropriate things I just need to, like, point out here, which, again, just, like, lend into the creepiness. I love too that we're reading this right after Alice in Wonderland because
gosh, it's so perfect.
There are parallels between Alice and Wonderland and Neverland. And so in again, like assuming that J.M. Barrie like grew up reading or knowing of Wonderland makes a lot of sense. Like I'm definitely seeing some inspiration here. So the kind of the rest of what we read in this first half is like kind of cozy, like a little bit. We're basically like nature crafting in the woods.
Yes, we're building a little tiny house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're building a little house. Like people are having a good time, like the Lost Boys and Wendy are playing.
Everyone's bonding.
It's very cute. It's very, very cute. Chapter 6 ends a little weird, though. a little bit weird. Mm-hmm. So we've built the house. We've played, and then Peter is keeping watch outside the house. So the chapter ends with this. After a time, he fell asleep, and some unsteady fairies had to climb over him on their way home from an orgy. Any of the other boys obstructing the fairy path at night, they would have mischieved. But they just tweaked Peter's nose and passed on. What?
Hello?
I'm sorry.
Well, because, hold on.
Orgies?
Morgan, because what you missed was the sentence before that, which is, the little house looked so cozy and safe in the darkness, with the bright light showing through its blinds and the chimney smoking peacefully, and Peter standing on guard. Morgan, it's like we lulled into a sense of softness and security, and then there's the word orgy. In this book.
I'm sorry. This is a children's book?
This is a children's book. And that these are not fairies. I mean, we do know that fairies like orgies, but what we don't need to talk about is fairy orgies in front of children.
I mean, in They're True Blood and
on
like
the
Avatar.
Way back from the orgy. No. And they just tweaked Peter's nose instead of slapping him upside the head or something.
Maybe
drawing a penis on his face.
Just like they tweaked his nose instead of his nipples. Like, I don't, that's, fuck, what? This is a kid's book. What if I was reading this to children? I have a niece, okay? She's not going to know that word. She's going to be like, what's an orgy?
Orange.
I'm not in a position
it's an orange.
To explain that.
It's an orange.
That's not for auntie. No, that is not for auntie. So then we go into chapter 7. I can't. That just like interrupted the whole thing. Like we have this lovely like whimsy playtime and then it's like, what? They're like stumbling home? It's like walk of shame. Like fairy parade.
Yes.
Oh my God. I can't. I can't.
So the other creepy thing that was happening in the Home Under the Ground chapter was that Wendy was quizzing her siblings of remind me what our parents look like,
ooh,
which was haunting and creepy.
Yeah.
We don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but it was like, you remember when you used to write a note and like, do you like me? Yes or no? It's do you remember like mm-hmm. mother's eyes? Were they what color were it? Just,
yeah.
Oh, so creepy.
Who was taller? Write, you know, a short essay on the family vacation we took 2 years ago. Like, something's happening with Neverland that is, like, erasing their memories.
Like continuity. It's
yes.
just slipping.
And it seems to be happening, like, the younger they are, the stronger it is. Because, like, you know, at 14, Wendy still remembers these things. And she is able to recognize that they're forgetting. And so she, you know, puts this whole like plan into motion. Like, okay, well, we can't forget.
Quiz time. Here we go.
Michael is forgetting some things, but he's able to recall things quickly and like answer the questions and whatnot. But Michael is described that like he is totally foregone. Like, and he takes the most to rein back in. And, like, the exercises are really most necessary for him. So that's interesting.
Assimilate. The younger you are, the easier it is to forget in Neverland.
I think so. That it just, like, captures you and sucks you in. I don't know when the story... I think the story of Pinocchio is much older than this. And there's parts that...
Put it on the list.
Yeah, that, like, also make me think of Pinocchio when all of the boys
Jackass
go to the
island.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Getting vibes.
Ooh.
Of the jackassery. For sure. Wendy must be so tired. She takes a nap. I couldn't. I absolutely couldn't. There's just something so creepy about it. And then ending on the Mermaid's Lagoon, that was tough. That was tough.
This was what I wanted to say earlier in the episode, uh-huh. is we get a lot of asides from the author in this conversation with Peter and Hook. And mm-hmm. some of them are like, To Wendy's great dismay, Peter answered back to Hook some cocky, you know, thing that he said. And I just really letting his flaw flag fly, I would say.
Yeah.
He's not a modest boy.
No, he's not. And Wendy definitely was a little swept up on this adventure, and like she wants to spend time with Peter and get to know him more. And it seems to me like she's always looking for more depth. Like she wants to know more. I don't think there's more to Peter. Like
it's surface.
Yes. Like she's searching for things that don't exist, which is confusing because like they look like they should be the same age. And it's a little heartbreaking, like, you know, she's a young lady just trying to make a friend and, I don't know, maybe having some feelings.
Well, there's definitely some gender roles being played in this situation. So in her mind, what sort of, you know, man and wife kind of thing, or mother and father, because she is mothering the lost boys.
Yes.
How confusing.
Absolutely. A lot of traditional gender roles happening here. I also, so one of the other things, in this Mermaid's Lagoon, this was like such a major disappointment for Wendy, right? Like she was so excited. I think the first, like definitely the first sign that something was maybe amiss with Neverland, or definitely things are not what they seem here. That first taste we got when she met Tinkerbell, like she was so excited to meet a fairy. She had all these ideas in her head of what fairies could be like, and oh, they're so magical. And she's just this like little brat cussing her out, you know, and so not what she would imagine.
You don't get to be friends with this fairy.
Yeah, she's not the cute little whimsical happy fairy from her dreams. And the mermaids turn out to be kind of a similar situation. Like, they are vain, they're self-centered. Like, they also seem to have kind of this possession over Peter. Like, he comes and visits them, and they have this whole relationship with him and, like, to flirt, and she's just not welcome to be a part of it. It's disappointing.
It's like when you're excited to meet your friends, and then you meet them. And you were so excited to meet them. And then you're like, oh, I just don't gel with this Mermaid Lagoon situation. Like, the Mermaid Lagoon is just not for me with Peter. And that's okay.
Yeah, and that's disappointing.
All these potential friendships that she just doesn't get to have now.
No. And it also, like, the experience, while maybe seeming a little, like, romantic or something, I put a romantic tone on it because that's how I'm just reading the scene. I'm like, oh, Peter and I will go and visit the mermaids and we'll fly together on this private tour of Neverland. Like, it just seems very dreamy. But then also, like, Tiger Lily is there and she is being kidnapped. And so it becomes a rescue mission. And just, everything is so unexpected, and there's just always something fucking happening. There's just never like a quiet moment, which as a person who's like a homebody and loves quiet moments, it's too busy for me.
Wendy doesn't get a second of peace on this island.
No, she doesn't. Mm-hmm. Damn it. It's just, yeah, it's a wild place. Like, this is very much, I feel like the first half of this book moved quickly, and I'm getting a sense of the drastic change and uncertainty and chaos that is Neverland. And
I don't think that Peter also owns his leadership role. Like, he knows he's in charge, but also he's just like, everyone is following me and that's their choice, and so the decisions that I make, that's not really my fault. Because I'm reading, like, the end of this chapter, he's just like, sending Wendy on a sail to, like, get her out of danger. But it's just like, he sets her on the sail and then is like, goodbye, Wendy. Mm-hmm. And then that's it. Like, he's not really, like, not concerned for her well-being, but just being like, okay, goodbye. I'm like,
Dude.
Yeah.
Dude.
Okay. I think that he likes being popular. That's what I think it is. He enjoys the popularity. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want the responsibility, though, of being a leader. But he loves that, like, oh my God, people look to me and
I'm the decider.
Yes. And people are going to listen to me and I can make them do what I want. And everybody has to do what I want and they'll follow that. That's what he likes. He likes being the center of attention. He likes the attention, the popularity.
Oh my gosh, the implications.
Yep. I think so. This, can I just read the last paragraph of this chapter?
Yes.
Because I also think, I love the way that this ends. Because this really is a turning point. That, yeah, like, uh-oh. Uh-oh.
It might not be okay.
Shit's popping off. They're getting kidnapped and shit's about to pop off. So, last paragraph here. Peter was not quite like other boys, but he was afraid at last. A tremor ran through him, like a shudder passing over the sea. But on the sea, one shudder follows another till there are hundreds of them, and Peter felt just the one. Next moment, he was standing erect on the rock again, with that smile on his face and a drum beating within him. It was saying, to die will be an awfully big adventure.
What a great stopping point for us.
So maybe he's not a complete psychopath. Like, that showed a bit of recognition there. Something scared him and made him think, like, oh, this isn't just fun and games. But he bounced back quickly.
Like, he obviously has a concept of death and he has a concept of, like, end and killing. But, like, this is him considering his own mortality almost and kind of wondering about it. Oh, man. This is, Morgan,
is it personal growth?
I came into this evening just being like, oh, we're going to talk about Peter Pan. There were some things unlocked that I did not even think about. The horror show that is this book. This is outstanding.
I also, I thrifted my book. And so after I brought it home and I started paging through it, it came with a bookmark. Somebody left a bookmark in here that just says, be strong.
Ooh. Apt.
I thought that was nice. I appreciated it. So, little token treasure. Okay, any closing thoughts on Peter Pan part one?
Great characters. I like that it's an expected storyline, that we have seen enough of the source material where now we can really dig into the horrors that lie underneath. Unexpectedly delightful, Morgan. This has been unexpectedly delightful for my mind this evening. Wow.
Yeah. I'm excited. Maybe next week we can also talk a little bit about Dracula, because just a reminder for people, you mentioned it, we are also consuming Dracula in the background. I say consuming because we are participating in a Substack subscription, a free just email subscription called Dracula Daily, which sends us an email on the days that there are Dracula events. So
journal entries, letters. Mm-hmm. And so as the you get to read the book through your email.
Yeah, like live, quote unquote.
As it's happening in real time.
In real time.
And so from May through November, we're going to be low-key just checking in with Dracula. So, yeah, I'd love to chat about Dracula next time, too. That'd be nice.
I love it. So that's going to wrap it up for us. And next week we'll be back with our third Wednesday of the season.
The month. Yeah, it's the season.
It's the season. The month. Not quite the month. But this is in between the first and second part of the books. We always take a little in between episode to just talk about other things. Sometimes we're reading other stuff. Sometimes for the last 2 months, Morgan hasn't. So Samantha tells her stories. But Samantha, I've been reading something
Gall darn
so
it. I'm excited.
I have content for next week.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait to check in on what's been going on in the background of your reading book club time.
Yes, excellent, excellent. But until then, shall we wrap this one up?
Let's do it. Love and abundance, friends.
Bye. I got a smile taking over my face. Feeling the sunshine all over the place. If it's for real, you're gonna